0818-715-815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. 51551 is our text number. Now, a little warning, please. Anyone who's gone away with children and lucky enough to have your holiday destination has a swimming pool, but as a group of children, invariably to get around to playing a really dangerous game to see who can hold their breath the longest underwater. And children must be warned about this, how dangerous it is. But for some reason, children do it. So that's what we're going to be talking about in one form or another, because there is a documentary at the moment. It's on Netflix. In fact, it's number one or two on Netflix. It's an Irish-made documentary, essentially. It features the tragic story of a young Irishman from Drumcondra in Dublin, Stephen Keenan. He was 39 and he was a safety diver. In other words, when records were trying to be set, and free diving is you dive as deep as you can. It's not just holding your breath, it's actually going as deep as you can. And when records are being attempted, he would be one of the safety divers that would be in different positions along the rope. They go down the rope, effectively. And Stephen tragically died in July 2017 when he was acting as a safety diver to an Italian woman who has broken every single record in this whole area. And the documentary, The Deepest Breath, is Stephen's story, basically. And it features Stephen's father, Peter Keenan. Now, again, a lot of people, especially in North Dublin, would have come across Peter Keenan over the years, because Peter Keenan ran incredibly efficiently with a great team. He ran the A&E unit in Temple Street Children's Hospital, and he was always there, always fair, and always deeply concerned about children. He was a lifesaver, and indeed, just as a son, turns out to be a lifesaver in this movie, The Deepest Breath. But it is a very, very, very tough watch. And when I mentioned it earlier, a number of people contacted us. Paula is in County Meath. Paula, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
Good, thanks. And the question I was asking, Paula, was, should there be a warning before The Deepest Breath to say to adults especially, do not let malleable young children see this, because it's so, so dangerous? What do you think?
Well, it would never occur to me that young children would be sitting down in front of this anyway. To me, it's a very adult program. Okay. So that would never occur to me. And also, I don't think it would have held their interest for more than 5 minutes, you know, because it's not... It's very gripping from an adult point of view, but it's really not from another person's point of view. But if I could just begin by saying, it was gut-wrenchingly sad.
Yeah.
And I would like to say how sorry and sad I was to that man, Peter, for the loss of his incredible son. Because clearly this guy, Stephen, was a one-off magnificent human being, a marvelous adventurer, a fantastic giving person. And it made it all the more heartbreaking that he lost his life for this trivial so-called extreme sport. Now, you can say he lost his life saving the life of the woman he loved, yes, I see that. I got that totally. But at the end of it all, this woman, she wasn't making her living at sea. She wasn't a fisherwoman, or she wasn't involved in anything. This was a sport where people die, and they die regularly. And anybody in it knows that. And I'm breaking records. I mean, who actually needs the record of being able to be diving 150 metres without scuba equipment? Why did we bother inventing scuba equipment if people want to jump into the water and dive down without it? I don't really understand it. Now, maybe that's my age, and maybe it's, you know, it probably is my age. But what I also couldn't understand, but Holly, your researcher, kind of, I didn't understand whatever about the person who's indulging themselves in the sport, i.e., in this case, it's an Italian woman, but anyone in general, let's keep it general, whatever about their decision to risk their lives, I didn't understand why the rescuers don't have the scuba equipment. And Holly, your researcher, says, well, they can only go down so far with that, and then that would probably implode or combust or whatever. And that's okay. I understand that. Well, then that's the depth that they should be at, no lower. So they go down with the breathing equipment apparatus on their back, on the rope, and they stay at that safe depth for them. And then the person doing the dive, who obviously wants to free dive down, they know, okay, I'm on my own from here on out, and I have to get back up here to have any sort of hope of surviving this. But I don't understand why the rescuers are free diving as well. To me, it seems insane and bizarre. You know?
Well, my understanding, by the way, we're talking about The Deepest Breath, which is on Netflix at the minute. Our WhatsApp number is 087-184-3709. Part of my understanding of why Stephen couldn't wear, the safety divers don't wear scuba gear, is because of the bends. Because if you have the breathing apparatus on your back, you can only come up at a certain speed, and you have to stop 5 minutes, 10 minutes, or whatever on the way back up to stop decompressing and getting the bends. Whereas if you free dive as well, well, then you don't, you can come up much quicker. That's my understanding.
Okay.
Maybe some divers can tell us.
Well, that's an explanation. You see, as I say, I don't know enough about this. Hmm. But what I do know is, it seems to me a very minority sport, and these people are indulging themselves in this insanity. And that's okay. If that's what they want to do, I really don't have a problem with that. It's their life and it's their decision. But the people who are there to rescue them, I just think it's reckless endangerment of other people. And I really feel that this is It's madness. It's absolute madness. And to be fair, as I say, I don't want to be derogatory about anybody on the program in particular, because I thought that guy Stephen was a total prince among men, and I wouldn't have a bad word to say about it. But for me, this isn't any different than the hundreds of people who decide they want to climb Everest, and they off they go up Everest, and they might die, but there'd be a couple of Sherpas who had to go after them, or rescuers, and they'll die as well. And I don't really understand any of that, apart from the fact that Everest was conquered a long time ago, and so what's the big deal now? And if you want to indulge yourself in that, go ahead and indulge yourself. But I think if you're a single guy or a single woman and you want to go and climb Everest and it's your dream, you go right ahead and climb Everest. But if you have dependents, children in other words, you shouldn't be allowed. I wouldn't allow, if I was running the world, you would not be allowed to indulge in any of these extreme sports if you had dependents.
Absolutely mad. Stay with us, Paula. We're talking about the documentary The Deepest Breath. It's an Irish-made documentary that features the life and indeed the tragic death of Stephen Keenan, who's 39 years of age. He was a safety diver in this world of free diving, which Paula has, as you can hear, no time for very, people say, good reason. It's see who can dive the deepest and the longest without breathing apparatus, just basically based on their lungs. Eddie Cummins, 0818715815. Eddie, good afternoon. Your point, please.
Yeah, Joe, how are you?
Good, thanks.
Just listening to that lady there. Yeah, I watched the documentary and I heard so much about it. I didn't know the tragic end that happened during it. But during the documentary itself, I was aware of the Russian diver, free diver, Natalia Komanovsky or something. I knew she died. She went missing 10 years ago or thereabouts. She was a free diver. But the fascinating thing about the documentary to me was that obviously it's a very, very dangerous sport, and no different than any other sport. People have lost their lives in lots of other sports. This is, you know, I was looking at the statistics of this sport that since its inception and its regulation, there's only been one death in over 80,000 events throughout the world. Mm. So it's pretty well regulated. It's when things go wrong, they go badly wrong. And this was happening in this instance. It went really badly wrong. And Stephen lost his life.
And what the initial point, should there have been a warning? Should there be a warning on Netflix that the subject matter is extremely distressing?
Well, it was. Like, I've no hesitation to tell you that I cried really like a baby at the end of it. I mean, the sadness of it, and maybe to a certain extent, the unnecessary death and loss of this lad's death. But, and all it was for the sake of maybe 10 or 20 seconds. That's what cost him his life.
Okay, stay there, Eddie. Pat Owens, Pat, your quick point, please. Joe at RTs.ie. Go ahead, Pat.
I just wanted to say that I ran the marathon in 2013, and I'd done the half marathon in 2013 as well. And okay. Each on those occasions, unfortunately, somebody died at it. Like what do we do? Do we give up running? Like, I did watch the documentary myself. Mm-hmm. And I seen where that chap has died. Like, other people have died doing that thing. There's headstones up of over 100 people who have died when they dive down, and where they dive underneath a rock, and then when they come up, they lose they run out of air or such. But like, that's what point I wanted to make.
Well, Paula said she thought it was insane, and people are losing their lives for trivial reasons. What do you think of that, Paula?
Well, if I could just come back
but
in
see,
there.
Think about it is,
no,
but just see, the thing about it is, like, I even watched one of the films on there where the man, when he training the people on bringing them up to Everest. If you watch the film Everest, like, people die up there and you walk by them. So should people stop doing that? It's about being an achiever.
Yes.
And achievers do these things. I have ran races, and I thought I was going to die when I crossed the line doing 10Ks and 5Ks. So if I died, would people say, Jesus, that was stupid? What was he doing?
No.
You know
You're
what I mean? This is what it's about.
It's not the same thing. And the other gentleman there who was speaking said, oh, you know, people die in other sports. And of course they do. I mean, you can get struck by lightning out on the golf course. The point is, this is not a spectator sport. In no way is this a spectator sport. This is a completely self-indulgent sport, in inverted commas. And it only involves you. You're not down there with a team. You've the rescuers up the top of you. They're the team. But you are not on a team, and there aren't crowds in the gallery. It is not a spectator sport. It's pitting yourself and your lungs against the depths of the ocean. And your other point about people step over dead people up on the top of Everest, so should it be stopped? Of course it should be stopped. They shouldn't be allowed to be climbing Everest.
Even
like
though
that.
they're all equipped with oxygen and modern equipment.
But Joe, you can have all the oxygen you want, and I've watched enough programs on Everest to know a storm comes in. And what I say is, if those people chose to climb Everest and they die, that's very sad, but they died, as that man says, trying to achieve something. That's okay. Now, the fact that it was achieved 100 years ago now seems pretty mad to me. So what are they trying to achieve?
Okay,
but they also, the local Sherpas, the local people, have to go and help rescue them. And they're losing their lives by the new time. And there's nothing about them. So I don't mind anyone wanting to do an extreme sport and indulge themselves in it. I've no issue at all. I can't say that.
Okay, let's hear. Let's hear.
Have to be rescued.
Okay, and there's more people. Okay, stay with us, Paula. But you know the old argument of why do you climb Mount Everest? Because it's there. Like it is about achievement. And okay, I know Pat mentioned the fact that people have died running the Dublin City Marathon, But the fact is, if God forbid you did collapse at the marathon, there's invariably medics within an arm's length of you.
They didn't have to run alongside you and drop dead on top of you as well. You understand? And it's the same thing with motor racing and things like that, and the TT racing, and there's fatalities in that. But the rescue team are not putting themselves...
Okay, so you're saying... Okay. Stephen Keenan was a member of the rescue team, and this is his voice from the documentary.
Steve was already waiting at 30 metres for quite some time. So he's running out of air.
Come on, Alex. 3:30 is a very long day now.
Trouble. Steve started to have contractions. He's seconds away from the blackout. But then he saw Alexei get into trouble around 40 meters. Split seconds decisions. Save Alexei or save himself.
I must say, listening to, I've watched it. I had to stop watching it because when Stephen Keenan died and it was in the papers in 2017, I immediately took an enormous interest in it because it was mentioned that Stephen was the son of Peter Keenan, who I mentioned earlier, who an awful lot of people know and admire. And as Paul has said, they admire his son as well. But unfortunately, his son was a safety diver and he died. I'm not mad about the music in that. That's the first time I've kind of heard it without the pictures. The music is a little bit overdramatic. By the way, there are clips, we'll get them. There are clips of Stephen talking because he gave many interviews. And in the world we live in, there's lots of footage from smartphones and that. And he did talk about being an adventurer, and he did talking about finding his niche or whatever, finding his tribe, as they say, in free diving. Jimmy McGrath. Jimmy, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you doing?
Good.
A bit nervous, Joe, because I've never talked to a radio show and I'm passionate about this movie.
Okay, tell us.
I'm going from a different line here, Joe. I've been totally an atheist all my life. I just seen too much, and you know, where I don't believe in anything. And when I watch this movie, I'm coming from a different point here. Mm-hmm. He held on for 20 seconds. Everything in them dives, it's split-second timing.
Yeah.
And they have to hyperventilate for up to a half an hour before they go down. And I just found it. The best global positioning unit in the world would not have found that lady.
Okay.
He found her.
Yeah, yeah.
You understand where I'm coming from, Joe?
Yes, I do. Yeah, yeah.
That was in his subconscious. He actually found her before he died. When she released the rope, and see, that place was not in Hawaii. That place was in Egypt. That was a daredevil dive. That was not...
It wasn't a record break, yeah.
For the world record. That was a certain depth down. That was 90 metres, could be corrected there. And then she lets go, and she heads on to 150 feet to another rope. She lost the rope. She didn't know up from down.
Yeah, yeah.
Then
because it's pitch black. It's pitch black down there.
Yeah,
and if you watch the documentary, he was 20 seconds too later than he should have been getting down, and she was 15 seconds earlier than she thought she would be.
But I want to...
So the timing was off.
Okay.
But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter why this happened. My entire point is, this is a totally unnecessary thing. It is it's not a great achievement.
It is not a wonderful exploration.
Okay.
It's not.
And I know, Paul, you're specifically concentrating on the fact that it's a safety diver who's lying. It was a safety diver who died. Okay, just hold that for a sec. Yeah. Jimmy, come back to where you began when you mentioned that you were an atheist. Or,
well, I mean, like this whole movie has changed my opinion. I mean, I was shocked. I don't know why Netflix did not go into it more, or the documentary didn't go into it more. Like, this guy, he was told to go. He did not go. And everything... See, Joe, that world record was 212 metres. I'm excited about this. I'm passionate, actually. That was 212 metres. And when they go down there, they go into this subconscious level where everything has to be so slow. Everything is timing, and they sink like a rock. They go down 7 minutes, Joe. It's 7 minutes, and the lady who was talking to me, she is right about the tank divers. They can't, because they suffer oxygen in their brain. It's banned. They can't go down that deep.
But how did Jimmy, come back to... You said this... You've watched it how many times, The Deepest Breath?
I've watched it 3 times, and I cannot for the life of me understand how they even found this girl. This Italian girl.
Okay, you said, but it was miraculous that he did, and miraculous for her that he.
Joke.
And
I
you
don't mean
you,
that.
You saw Alessia's yeah. father in the documentary very movingly saying, I would exchange my life for Stephen any day for what he did for my daughter. But you say it changed your way of thinking. In what way?
Correct, In the way that it was actually like watching a ghost for real in life. I can't understand how he actually found that girl. Because don't forget, it'd be like, Joe, can I explain to you? It'd be like you with your children being in trouble in town, and you saying that you have to go in town with a pair of blindfolds on you and drive into town, finding your child that's in trouble, picking up and putting, don't forget, they were in their honeymoon stage of their relationship. He absolutely worshipped the ground that girl walked on, and she worshipped him. Don't forget, she done 12 more dives after that, to exonerate that guy.
And she's broken 23 world records since.
Yeah, well,
and she's dedicated each one of them to Stephen Keenan.
Okay, and that's lovely, and I'm sure she has some lovely trophies on her mantelpiece. But in the meantime, this unfortunate guy is dead. As regards finding her and being divine inspiration and all that, there was a team in the general vicinity, and they were all looking for her at that stage, and it happened to be him that did find her. Now, maybe that's because he had an innate sense of where she might be. I'm not dissing that. I'm not trying to diss that. I just think, and I'm going to go after this because I can't add any more to this, and I don't want to keep repeating myself.
Okay.
I just think, for such a magnificent human being as he was, to lose his life for such a trivial thing as somebody diving down as deep as they can without the benefit of an oxygen or a diving bell or a submarine or whatever it is, when we have all those things today and they can have them, I just think it's absolutely mad. And I'm so sad for his lovely father. Clearly his mother isn't alive anymore. And I'm just really sad for the loss of such a fantastic person for such a silly, trivial thing.
So back after this break. Joe at RT.ie 51551 is the text number.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
We're talking about the Netflix movie, Irish-made documentary about Stephen Keenan from Dublin, who died. He was a safety diver, and he died rescuing a free diver who was also a very, very close friend of his from Italy, Alicia, and she survived by seconds. And he died by seconds in free diving, which is basically you dive as deep as you can without any aids whatsoever. Jules, good afternoon.
Hello.
Yeah, Jules, what did you think about what Paula was saying, that it's the fact that the safety diver died that she was deeply upset about?
Well, I think my basic point is I haven't actually seen this documentary yet, what I mean? But I will do, but I believe it's the Blue Hole in Dahab where they were diving. So I've scuba dived there and I've snorkeled there.
Okay.
You know, there's a very extreme thing. You go down to about 80 metres and you can swim out through an arch into the sea. There's a little cemetery there about how many people have died trying to do it. It's really technical diving.
Wow. Yeah.
So it is dangerous, right? But my point that I wanted to make is that I think, you know, people are driven to do these type of things. And I think that of all the sports I've done, diving is one of the most safety conscious ones. Like compare it to mountaineering, to mountain biking, to kayaking, skiing. You know, lots of people get killed, right? When they're trying to push the envelope. And there's a certain breed of human being. Like you go back to, you know, Mallory, he died trying to climb Everest, right? You know, there's just certain people who want to do this, right? But what I would like to say about the safety diver, although it's very tragic, there's a big community in diving. So, you know, I'm a rescue diver, but I'm more recreational. I wouldn't dive deeper than about 50 metres, you know, but I'm qualified to save other people.
Right.
And it's like a trust, you know, if it's a community. So I think this guy went into it, tragic as it is, with his eyes wide open, you know.
And you've dived there, but obviously with scuba equipment. What was that like?
Well, it's lovely. It's a big blue cauldron, right? And if you don't try to go down too deep, I think it was some kind of a meteor hit or something, you know.
Okay.
It's literally, it's like a big round swimming pool. But it's when you try to go down really deep in the blue hole, and what they call it, the arch, to try and get out through the arch into the open sea. That's when lots of people, free divers, I don't think you could do it free diving, but even lots of technical divers do it. And that's what I'd like to say, you know, there's several types of diving. Like I like to see fish and coral reefs, right?
Yeah.
I don't want to go down to 150 metres to see a shipwreck and spend 8 hours decompressing on the way back up. I don't want to do cave diving, which has a huge fatality. But there are people who want to do it. You know, I think that one of the most famous or most competent cave divers died a couple of years ago exploring a huge underground cave system in Mayo. You know?
Yeah. And Jules, if you would, just explain why... Though I think you have explained it in one sense there. Why Stephen, the rescue diver, the safety diver who's diving with Alicia, and if something goes wrong, he will get her up to the top as quickly as possible, up to the surface. Why he doesn't wear scuba gear?
Because I think you said it exactly. You know, he'd be getting nitrogen from the air into his blood. Whereas the free diver won't because you're just holding your breath, right? So he couldn't grab her and go straight up to the surface. He'd die on the way up, you know?
Yeah. So that's...
all the nitrogen would come out of his bloodstream and cripple him, you know? So it's possible.
Jules, have you met free divers in your travels?
Oh, I have, yeah.
And are they different to divers like yourself?
Well, I think they both like the sea and everything, but I think it's a more competitive thing, you know, because I think I want to go under the water to look at fish and see coral and stuff. Whereas I think when you're free diving, you're as your religious gentleman earlier said, you're very much going to a kind of like a meditative zone or something, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's more like a trance or something. So, you know, that's just my impression. But anyone I've met, like, they're all.
And have you ever had a scare, Jules, scuba diving?
Have I ever had a scare?
Yeah. Like, you know, when people, I've never done it, but when you, it is a scary looking sport. I'm talking about scuba diving.
It's not for everyone. It's not for everyone. Like, I originally qualified with my ex-wife, but she didn't really take to it, you know. But personally, I've never had a scare, no. Because as I said, like, I'm very safety conscious, you know.
All right.
Like, I've been diving all around the world, including off the west coast of Ireland, you know, which, by the way, is a UNESCO World Heritage Marine site.
But you dive...
Useful diving.
But as you said, you dive to observe and, in one sense, to gather information. Sometimes, I'm sure it can be new information as well. But free divers don't dive for the love of the sea or the love of the coral or the love of the reef. They dive to try and break a record.
Yeah, I think it's definitely more competitive, right? But, you know...
Is it a sport? It doesn't matter. But is it a sport?
Well, I don't know the answer to that, Joe, but it's something that people want to do, you know?
Yeah.
Is mountaineering a sport?
Say what if you can, Jules. Where's Eileen Bourne? Eileen, your point, please. Sorry for holding you there. Go ahead, Eileen.
Hi, Joe. Yeah, well, the subject matter first is, should there have been a warning beforehand?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I don't think so.
Okay.
It was recommended for me to watch, and I watched it, not knowing that it was going to be about deep diving, but not knowing the outcome. And it was very sad. But the chances, I think, of copycat or somebody going out and trying to do something like that is probably such a it's just the odds are almost zero, I would think. Whereas there's, let's say, for instance, they have a pro. I watch different extreme sports, and there's another film I've seen on the TV, which is the 100-foot wave in Nazaré in Portugal, and that started off, you're surfing the wave, and again, it's extreme, and one person died this year, I think it was a Brazilian, but and there was an Irish man up doing that as well, but I really don't think so.
Maybe you've hit something there. Is free diving and other sports as well, they make very good television documentaries, don't they? They make good entertainment.
Brilliant. Yeah, absolutely. I love them. I love the sea, but I don't do extreme sports. I never did. But I love watching about them. And I never knew what the ending was going to be in this one. And it's very sad for the family. Mm. And that man before, his father did say that he had many situations before he actually died where his life was threatened or at risk in some way. He didn't say which way, because he travelled around the different jungle areas and so on in the world. So, you know, it was a very good TV watching, I would think. It was a very unfortunate. There was something in the timing that when he went down to on the rescue, there was a 10-second delay or something, which I didn't really understand.
Well, in fairness, it was Jimmy earlier who described what he felt was the miraculous nature of it, is how Stephen actually found Alicia and rescued her in complete darkness down there. Here, by the way, is Stephen's father, Dr. Peter Keenan, talking about their relationship and Stephen's personality.
Alicia and Stephen really became a duet. In many ways, it was destiny that they found each other. I accepted that he was doing a dangerous thing, and I just kind of lived with that. Stephen loved being out in the wild. The two of us go swimming at 5 a.m. as the sun was coming up. I dive down and snorkel, and he'd be holding my hand and pointing with his own snorkel, pointing out fish here and fish there. What's the biggest this? What's the smallest that? What's the least common whale? What's the most common whale? That was endless. Why, what, where, how often, how many?
And that is Peter Keenan talking about his late son, Stephen. Brian, your point, please, Brian. Sorry for holding you. Go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, no, I mean, 2 points. First of all, Joe, I mean, first of all, of course, free diving is a sport. I mean, and people have always, challenged themselves to go as further than mm-hmm. they had went before, or deeper than the next person. The same as mountains, okay? People climb mountains because it's a challenge, and people dive to depths because it's a personal challenge as well. So yeah, I don't need to understand it, but I just need to know that other people do and love it. So therefore, as far as I'm concerned, it is a sport, and it's a sport that other people get joy from watching, because you know, the seeing someone challenge themselves again and succeed in that challenge is always exciting to watch. But the point I had though was, it was such a tragic story. I mean, he had two jobs that day. One was to bring the rope down to the other side of the arch, and the other was to be a safety diver to bring it up. And the fact that he went and delayed his descent meant that when Alicia came out from under the arch, there was no rope there. And I think that was the big ultimate failing. I mean, the fact that when she came out, there was no rope there for her to come back up again. And as a diver myself, I am an amateur diver, I mean, I'm paddy trained, I don't understand. The main problem, as far as I've always understood it, is that decompression occurs when you're down at a particular depth for too long. But if you're just down and then back up again, and if you breathe properly, as you're supposed to do when you're going back up to the scuba tank, then decompression shouldn't be an issue. So I've never, looking at a thing, I couldn't fully understand exactly why the divers who are the safety divers themselves don't have scuba tanks.
Jules?
It's very strange.
Hi. Jules, sorry, could I just say a quick thing there? It's because oxygen is toxic under 50 metres. So unless you're breathing Trimix or some sophisticated technical gas, oxygen under 50 metres can induce convulsions. So normal scuba gear is just basically air, compressed air. It's got nitrogen and oxygen in it. So that's why they can't breathe normal scuba down that far.
But I was reading it earlier now, so I haven't got it to hand, Jules and Brian, that in the report, okay, I know this, it's a sport, but how regulated is the sport? Because in a report afterwards, it said there wasn't a qualified medic on the bank, so to speak, above ground, above the surface. There wasn't an ambulance on standby. The report was quite critical. And I think I mentioned the fact that Stephen was very busy. But the report was quite critical of the way the whole dive was arranged. So
possibly, I can't comment, but all I'll say is I've dived.
There was
all
no,
around the
just,
world.
This is the official.
Dodgy dive operators, let's say that, right? Where I wasn't happy with the safety just on a boat or something. But I can't comment on this particular incident. But usually the Egyptian authorities are very tight because there's been so many fatalities in the Blue Hole. You know?
Okay, well, the official report stated that reasonable precautions had been taken. However, it is noted there was no on-site specialist doctor, insufficient medical equipment, no safety boat and no ambulance on standby. So that's critical as well, I suppose.
If the accepted safety standards up to that point, when carried out properly, didn't need those extra precautions, then there was no need for those extra precautions to be around. Looking at the documentary, the root cause that I saw as there being the problem was the fact that there was the rope rod wasn't there because Stephen had delayed his initial descent, which wouldn't have happened if the two roles, bringing the rope down so that the diver knew exactly how to come back up again, and the having a rescue element to the dive would have been separated out. But again, it's up to that point, no, there hadn't been any other problem, and it was just a tragedy that the two of them missed each other under the water.
Geraldine.
Absolutely, and it's a matter of planning, I think. Like you could be using rebreathers, right, which is a closed-loop system where you recycle the oxygen from your own breaths, right? You could go deeper with those, but they still couldn't ascend quickly. But maybe they could have bags with a little cylinder on them. So if you do recover somebody unconscious, you can shoot them up to the surface. But I don't know enough about freediving. Mm-hmm. I just, I'm going to probably have to go in a minute. But
okay, then
I
we
just
find...
wanted to make that point. I think that diving in general is very safety conscious.
Okay, that point is made.
Experience.
Okay. I'll let's take a quick break and more after this break. Joe at rt.ie 51551 text.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at RT.ie, we're talking about the deepest breath. Dahio Hainik is a free diver. And thank you for contacting us, Dahi. Good afternoon. Dahi, have you seen the documentary?
Hi, Joe. I have indeed. Yeah, I've seen the documentary. Okay. I know a couple of the people in it. Yeah.
Okay. Did you know Stephen?
I didn't know Stephen, no. But he's revered in the freediving community. Like I sometimes say, our empire is spiritual and freediving.
And it is. Is there a spiritual element to it?
Oh, well, freediving is very, very, it's completely different to scuba diving. So what I meant by that is, like, as Irish people, we have a lot of very well-known freedivers in the freediving community internationally.
Okay.
So Stephen is one of, several characters who obviously are Irish and found it difficult to practice freediving in Ireland and have gone to places like Bali, Egypt, to set up freediving schools. So we have quite a strong lineage in freediving, the sport as it is.
And you are a freediver?
I'm a freediving instructor, yeah. Okay. So freediving and scuba diving are completely different.
Okay.
So scuba diving would be considered more of a pastime. It's not competitive.
Yeah.
So freediving obviously requires a lot of mental calmness and preparedness because you're obviously going to dive down on one breath that you take. So everything counts towards, you know, that oxygen that you're taking into your lungs. So even thinking consumes oxygen. So if you can kind of calm down your thoughts, go into a deeply meditative space, that's the kind of spiritual aspect to freediving. And people who can relax as much as possible, It's really good. It's proven very, very good for treatment of mental health conditions, depression. Mm. People have very, very deep spiritual kind of experiences when they're freediving.
And the aim of, just for the uninitiated, the aim is to what? Get longer and deeper?
The aim is to do the dive in as much comfort and safety as you possibly can. So this is one of the challenges we have in Ireland with freediving at the moment, is that people see documentaries like this, they hear of accidents, and obviously sports can be practiced in an extreme way and a safe way. So when dealing with, you know, out of season, freedivers tend to train in swimming pools. So me as an instructor, when I try to book swimming pools in Ireland, I get this very kind of afraid response going, you know, oh, everyone's going to die. But it's the same as any other sport. You can practice freediving in a safe, methodical way from first principles. You can practice it in safely, or you can practice it like, you know, at these world competitions in an extreme way and push the limits. But it's a very meditative practice. You know, there is a certain level of physical fitness required. Obviously, it's a different type of fitness, anaerobic fitness. But the calmer you can make yourself, essentially, the better freediver you're going to be.
How can you practice free diving in a swimming pool? The only thing you can practice in a swimming pool is holding your breath, isn't it? And is that not a different discipline?
So there are several different freediving disciplines. So there's a number of disciplines which are practiced in the swimming pool and a number of disciplines which are practiced in the open water. Now, what you're doing when you're training freediving is you're helping your body prepare to do more with the same amount of oxygen. So when you're holding your breath, basically carbon dioxide is rising in your bloodstream because you can't exhale. So there's a whole nother type of fitness called anaerobic fitness, as opposed to aerobic fitness, which you can train your body to withstand. So if you can hold your breath in a swimming pool and swim from one side to the other repeatedly, you're enhancing your body's ability to deal with rising levels of CO2, and that serves you then out in the open water.
And what about long-term effects, Dahi?
If you're long-term effects? Sorry. Long-term, when you say long-term, are you talking over the course of someone's life?
Do your lungs suffer from being put under so much pressure?
If anything, Joe, freediving has been shown to have positive health benefits. So the lungs' capacity to go down to that size and you know, reestablish their original volume when we come to the water. There's a whole set of things that the human body can do that are invoked as part of the freediving practice. There's something called the mammalian dive reflex, which when human beings put their face into water, all of their metabolic kind of processes slow down. Okay. So the heart rate slows down, the breathing slows down, obviously, and blood shifts from your extremities in to protect your vital organs. So, you know, it depends on your beliefs, Joe, but, you know, hundreds of millions of years ago, we were in the sea. We crawled out of the sea. We started climbing trees. So mm-hmm. there is some very ancient knowledge in our systems that seems to get reawakened when we actually dive in this way. So our bodies kick into this other functioning mode called the mammalian dive reflex, which allows us to actually hold our breath longer underwater. So, Joe, if you were to try and hold your breath now, mm-hmm. and you took a deep breath and dipped your face in water, you would actually be able to hold your breath for longer with your face dipped in water than out of water. So that's another thing that most people don't actually understand about freediving.
But I thought there was also records for somebody, say, in a swimming pool, just keeping their head underwater.
Yeah, so that's what I mentioned. There's a number of disciplines.
Okay.
So you'll see people diving up and down a rope in the open water.
Yeah.
And then in the swimming pool, you'll see people swimming horizontally from left to right. There's another one which you just mentioned is called static apnea. So that's measuring how long you can actually hold your breath, staying mm-hmm. stationary with your face submerged in water. So the world record at the moment is a little bit over 10 minutes in that. So that just gives you an idea of what the human body is capable of.
Sorry,
the world records for diving, you know, vertically up and down the line, depending, you know, on the discipline in the open water, is roughly between 130 and 140 metres at the moment.
That would take how long? 10 minutes?
No, that would be about a 4-minute dive. Alexei Malkinov recently beat his own record in a competition called Vertigo Blue in the Bahamas, and his dive time would have been in and around four and a half minutes.
And is the dive time, is it 4.5 minutes, that's how long he can hold his breath, or that's how deep he can go?
No, so it's a combination of two things. So he can go 130 meters while holding his breath, but also there's physical exertion. So he's spinning mm-hmm. up and down to the bottom of the line. So it's a combination of a number of things. It's your depth and your time. So it's not just, you know, it takes 10 minutes to dive to 130 meters. It depends on your fitness. It depends on your relaxation. But roughly, those kind of, you know, world record beating dive depths at the moment, about 130, 140 meters, they'd be taking the divers, you know, between 3.5 and 4.5 minutes, depending mm-hmm. on their stamina, speed, fitness, any other different things in the day as well.
So then why do I get queasy, as I did at the start, when I said if there's young ears listening? Because it goes back to what you said earlier, Di, about where we came. But what is the thing when children get into a swim? Please don't do it. Please don't do it. But when children get into a swimming pool, 3 or 4 of them together, they eventually come round to see who can stay underwater the longest. And it's so dangerous.
Yeah, it's a curiosity. But the only way to remove the danger, Joe, is to, you know, provide education.
Mm-hmm.
So the courses I teach, freediving.ie, the courses I teach, we teach from level 1 up to level 4 and then advanced after that. So level 1 is a 1-day course. It's very, very, starts at very first principles, with a huge focus on safety. I've been certified to teach by a French international organization called AIDA, and I'm fully insured to teach as well. So I have to go through a really, really strict, stringent teacher's course, essentially, coach's course, before I can actually be insured and certified to actually teach new students. So it's like everything, Joe. It's, you know, people love a little bit of sensation and headlines as well. Like we did lose someone very, very special in Stephen Keenan. And he was helping, you know, in a very sincere way, people reach world records. And he was an amazing character by all accounts. I'm sad that I never get to know him or meet him. But he's huge in people's minds and memories and all of there's so many, like, you know, the top 10 athletes will drop his name, you know, regularly, thanking him, like, "You're always with me in the water, Stephen," all of this kind of stuff. So as a character, as a proponent of free diving, as an Irishman, he seems to have been quite a huge person. But what I want to make sure is that, you know, free diving is it's a very helpful discipline for people to overcome fear, to interact with the water. But moving away from the sensationalist way in which it's been reported, there's ways of doing everything safely.
Okay.
Free diving is in a danger of getting that kind of, you know, it's too dangerous
absolutely
for everybody. There's no way to do it safe.
Jules, yeah.
It's Jules here. I'd like to totally agree. I think that this person's been very, very eloquent in expressing it. What I was trying to say, scuba diving is not free diving. It's very, very different.
Of course.
But hey, maybe I've snorkeled down to 10 metres. That's as near as I've got to a free dive. But it is a very different experience. Now, if you're scuba diving, you're full of equipment. Like, it's only when you get in the water that you become weightless, you know, lumbering around the boat, diving off, as opposed to being, as this gentleman was saying, I think there's a much more mystical aspect to free diving.
Yeah.
Like, you know, for example, this might sound a bit weird, but there's lots of examples of Hindu yogis going into a meditation and sitting down the bottom of a swimming pool for 20 minutes, right? Which shouldn't be possible from a scientific point of view. It's just that they've gone into a trance and they've slowed down their metabolism, much as that gentleman was saying. I found his talk very interesting.
Dahi, how did you get into free diving?
I'm a yoga teacher. I was on holidays in Bali, and I had just done my first scuba diving course, and I went to a camp just as I finished it, and I did my first paddy open water course. And I'm a water engineer by trade as well. I studied water engineering in college, so I've always been a little bit obsessed with water. Sorry, repeat your question.
Yeah,
again?
Just why? How did you? And you said meditation. How did you get into free diving?
So I was on a holiday in Bali. I'd just done a surfing camp or something like that, and I was talking to a yoga teacher that night, and she said, "Believe it or not, there's an Irishman from Castleknock who set up a freediving school on the east coast of Bali. You should definitely check it out."
Mm-hmm.
So I had a few days left at the end of my holiday in Bali, went up and did the level one course. I'm an art psychotherapist as well, so I'm big into the concept of treating trauma and meditation and all of that kind of stuff. So I did my first course there. I was able to put all of my yoga training, my meditation practice, my breathing practice into one single thing. And I experienced the most blissful peace I've ever experienced in my life. And I returned to Bali 3 months later to the level two, and I've been just like obsessed with it ever since. I started teaching in Ireland about 3 years ago, and I teach in Killary Fjord in Connemara.
Yeah, beautiful. Okay, stay with us. More people want to come in on this after this break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Geraldine, sorry for holding you, Geraldine. Your son.
Yes, my son Andrew, who's autistic, decided about 7 years ago that he would like to do scuba diving.
Okay.
And I, at the time, it was the first time he'd ever asked to do anything, because he was like in his own kind of little cozy world. And he went off, researched it, contacted a club, and went for a try dive with the club. and decided to do the course. He has been diving now for over 6 years, and it has changed his life completely. It was amazing what happened to him. Because up to then, Joe, like being autistic, he wouldn't engage. He was very much in the house all the time. Didn't go out socialising at all. But since joining the dive club and getting to know all the divers and they embracing them, he's a different guy altogether, completely.
And did he come across any impediments when he was inquiring about asking to learn how to scuba dive?
Well, there's so much safety around the job. Okay. That was my worries. Well, my initial worries was that he wouldn't have told them that he was autistic, you see. So when we turned up at the try dive, I went and apologised, first of all, for not being in touch with him. But at that stage, he was an adult and mammy interfered in his life, like, and okay, trying to treat him like an adult. And they had obviously done a vetting on him and realised that he had special needs. So he was paired with somebody with special needs. But to be quite honest with you, Joe, I didn't think he would stay because the noise in the pool that day, I'll never forget it. And he was very sensitive to noise. But there's a lot of safety stuff around it, and he's had to have a medical, like, and everything before he dived. Now, the beauty of it is, see, there's no talking in diving. It's all sign language, right?
Yeah.
And it's all very much the do's and don'ts. So there's a right way of doing something, and there's a wrong way of doing something. And as a previous gentleman has said, it's not a competition. So everybody dives to their own limits. And if they don't want to dive, they don't dive. So, like, it is, again, the very safety conscious within the club.
But your son, Geraldine, he would dive for enjoyment. He'd dive for joy, wouldn't he?
Oh, absolutely, yeah, absolutely.
So what do you think, which is very different, as everyone keeps reminding us, what do you think of free diving?
Well, there's a couple of free divers in the club, people who joined and then became free divers. But, like, that's a person's choice. Mm. You know, they don't set out to harm anybody. It's that there's something they want to do that they're passionate about. And, like, they seem to really, really be into it, you know, from what I gather. They're passionate about the thing. And, like, that's their choice, Joe. That's their choice.
Yeah, but remember.
Didn't set out to put anyone in danger. You know, we all are aware of stuff. We live our lives the way we want to live our lives, and people, I don't think she put him in danger, and he thought he could rescue her. That's what I reckon.
Which he did, but he died in the process.
Yeah. He did, yeah. Subconsciously, he obviously did think he could rescue her. And it was just unfortunate what happened, you know?
Mm. He lost his
what I would be worried about, what that first woman said, was about banning it and doing this. If you ban stuff or regulate it too much, then it goes underground and it becomes even more dangerous.
Yeah, of course. Yeah,
that is not good, you know?
Let me bring Roisin there, Geraldine. Roisin Fox, you've watched the documentary.
I just wanted to tell you that I watched it. I thought it was a superb documentary. It was difficult to watch at times, but you are actually on the edge of your seat. I think it's a story of love, loyalty and bravery of this guy, Stephen Keenan. It just had me on the edge of my seat. The film was very well done. It was superbly photographed.
And did you know? I thought a lot of people in Ireland knew the outcome because Stephen was Irish. But did you know the outcome before you started watching it?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
No, I didn't. It was, yes, I actually cried at it. I had tears in my eyes. And, you know, even when they were going down, I was holding my breath to see how long I could hold my breath for. But I just found it just a wonderful, wonderful film. I'm not involved in any of that kind of sports. I do a little bit of swimming, and that's it. And I didn't understand the sport at all. So from that end, I thought, oh, my God, why do people want to do this? But, you know, the understanding, the love that he had for her, to save her, you know, that just, it's a must watch for everybody. The documentary is so well made. I think.
But you think it's a you read it as a love story?
As many things, you know, a friendship, a love story, the bravery, all of that. I wouldn't even call it a documentary. You know, yes, a story. It's about two incredible people and how they met. You know, she was Italian, he's Irish, and the both of them grew up with this love of the sea and diving. So, and then they were meant to meet. It was meant to happen. So you get lost in it all in the underwater world of the Camden. I'm on as well because I am on a committee for the Allingham Festival in Ballyshannon, and they are bringing this film to the Allingham Festival on the 10th of November. So anyone that hasn't seen it can see it on the big screen here in Ballyshannon, County Donegal, in the Abbey Centre. I'd say, you know, it's going to, because I don't think it's been in a lot of cinemas around. It's just been on Netflix. So I think the fact that we're getting it to the Allingham Festival shows, you know, how good this film is and how people want to see it. So that's all I really just wanted to say.
And you don't think there should have been a warning beforehand saying this? Some scenes are very distressing.
No. I mean, I've seen worse. You know,
you get warnings on Netflix now, up in the far left-hand corner. I'm not talking about scenes of a sexual nature or nudity. You get cigarette smoking is a warning. Yeah. They warn you there's going to be cigarette smoking. But anyway, Roisin, go to Mila Market back after this. joe@rt.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Sinead Harnwell. Sinead, good afternoon. You say you love The Deepest Breath.
Absolutely, Joe. Good to talk to you today. First of all, I would like to say, I don't know the lady involved until I saw the documentary, the director of the film, Laura McGann. And I actually went to I loved it so much, and the sensitivity with which she projected the whole film. And also, I think she made a massive effort in the documentary to convey to us, again, which your previous callers have said, about the spirituality and the spiritual journey of these people who do it. So I think she absolutely did a beautiful documentary. And the other thing about it is, I'm sure when she had the idea in her mind 3 years ago, 4 years ago, lots of people would have put her down and said, oh, no, that won't fly and you won't get the funding and you won't get this. Mm. And she went for it. So I think I would see this all about being people's dreams. Now, the first lady caller really was what pushed me to ring in the fact of, you know, that she felt it was
self-indulgent, insane.
Exactly, self-indulgent.
And dying for trivial reasons.
Exactly. What I took from the documentary, Joe, is that no safety diver or nobody that was in the water with the people diving themselves or the safety divers didn't 100% love what they were doing. Yeah. Unlike Everest, where the Sherpas go up because they need to make a living, that's a different story. Maybe people should go up, the guides going up Everest should be other mountain lovers and not going up for a financial reason. But definitely, to me, the documentary drove home the feeling of the journey. It was these people's journey. They absolutely loved it. Mm-hmm. And also, as a parent, I feel, when we start trying to take ownership of people's dreams, we're heading into ridiculous territory in life, I think. And, you know, a ship looks fabulous in port, but it was meant to sail. Your children were meant to fly. Mm. Would you feel better keeping them at home, wrapping them up in cotton wool? Maybe, but I also feel the lady who was 100% behind her autistic adult son very brave. That's what parents do. You give them wings and you let them fly. And you can't cherry pick. But I do feel everybody was in the water for the same reason. They absolutely loved it. And it was a spiritual journey. And I think Laura's documentary brings that over fully as well. You know, it's beautiful piece.
And, looking...
and dreams are so important, yeah. Joe. And goals and dreams. But I have a funny feeling that if there wasn't even records involved, I think these people would still do what they do because they adore it. I think maybe the more human element of maybe the ego to go the extra meter, the extra foot, maybe that our humanity creeps in then. But for these people, and when you watch Alessia going down, at one point she said she felt like a mermaid. You can feel the spirituality. It's like going on a retreat for them, I think, but for a different type of retreat. I'm talking about regulations. You know, she wanted to do certain dives before 18 and the associations wouldn't let her. She was personally upset about that. But the safety around the whole thing was stupendous. These are people's dreams, and I can't see them being able to do them in another way.
But there is an added poignancy. I'm looking at your call here now, Sinead, when you say people living their dreams and you can't wrap them in cotton wool because of what happened to your own child.
Well, my own child did have an accident 7 years ago, which unfortunately he didn't survive. He was living abroad. It was a simple fall. Okay. He went into his accommodation. He thought there was nothing wrong. He had a 2-inch cut on the side of his head. But unfortunately, he had sustained a brain hemorrhage. He did get into surgery over there. Fantastic clinics over there. And he had a full craniotomy to try and ease up the pressure on the brain. But unfortunately, he went into cardiac arrest post-op. So, you know, if he'd stayed in Ireland and I'd wrapped him up in cotton wool, he may be here today, but he was doing what he loved. He loved his life. You know, I used to collect him at Dublin Airport and I'd say, Carol, would you not come down now? So he was nearly 28, you know, settled down into what we perceive, what people perceive as a normal transition in life, you know, so getting settled, having your goals and things. But there are people who don't fit that mould, and they are the people that should be supported by their families to do these things. I would suspect that Stephen's father would be the one who would have the real idea on this. He seemed very, very proud of his son. He knew his son was doing something he adored. And many people can say when they die, I was doing something I adored. And also the element in this is he had also, I think, found the love of his life. It may not have progressed, but they got each other. And they deeply loved each other. I think he'd have gone down for anybody. He was that type of bloke. He was really a gladiator of disease. But the added thing was, he would have gone down for anybody. But I think as a parent, if I felt he went down for someone he loved and that he'd known that kind of love in his life, again, that would bring you a certain amount of peace, I feel.
Okay, stay with it, Sinead. Liam Clegg. Liam, you are a scuba diver, but you say you've been scuba diving since you were 18. And you're so many years have you been actively diving?
Well, Joe, I'm 79 now, so I'm not diving all that time. But diving for about, actively diving, 46 years.
Wow.
Diving all around the coast of Ireland.
Have you ever been tempted? I know you're a scuba diver, which is non-competitive, but have you ever been interested in free diving?
Sure, yeah. I tried it, but I wasn't interested. I wasn't fit enough to go past maybe 30 feet on a free dive.
Wow.
And
okay.
The thing about diving, whether you're scuba diving or free diving, is when you hit, say, around 60 feet, the colour disappears.
Wow.
And the light starts to disappear.
Oh, my gosh.
And you get to 75 or 80 feet, and you're into the dark. So it's not pleasant. It's not lovely to look at. There's nothing to see.
But you love scuba diving if you're doing it for nearly 50 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I've got to leave it at that, Liam. Good to meet you, Mahogood. Today's producer was Dave Sherry, and Kira King is next.
0818 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.